be Christians who make the Jesus revolution irresistible by becoming extremist for grace. Ladies and gentlemen, Shane Claiborne.
Good morning. How's everybody feeling? I can't believe you guys wake up this early. That's great. I know I may not look like your usual preacher man. I hope you're okay with that. I've heard some weird stuff about you here at Greenbelt, and I hope it's all true. Actually, I have a friend that he told me he's kind of an anarchist punk rock kid in Philly, and he said, I heard you were preaching at a church. I didn't know that you were a preacher. And I said, well, I love to share about Jesus and the kingdom that he talked about. And he said, well, I would go to a church that would let you preach. I thought, wouldn't we all? You know, don't we believe in a God that uses the foolish things to shame the wise and the weak things to shame the strong? So I feel right at home amongst you fools. And I must say, there's a lot of fools around Greenbelt. And that's not such a bad thing nowadays. Because I look at the wisdom of the world, you know, and we've got these things like, in our country, they call the bombs smart, you know, smart bombs and military intelligence. You get, and I'm like, wow, in an age of smart bombs and military intelligence, I take great pride in being a fool and an idiot for Christ. So, it's good to be amongst you. I'm looking forward to sharing this morning about Christian troublemaking. Are there some troublemakers in the house? Jacques Ellul, the French theologian, he said, Christians have never been normal. Christians have always been troublemakers, creators of uncertainty, agents of a dimension that is incompatible with society. And I think that we are meant to be a bit odd, like Mike Iaconelli always said. He said, they shall know the truth, and the truth shall make them odd. And so here we are, crazy and all quite odd. I was raised in an area where all the Christians weren't odd, though. You know, in the United States, I lived in an area we call the Bible Belt, which is, there's like a church building on every corner. And I was just smothered with Christianity, but I was so thirsty for God. I went to all the youth group. I went to like four different congregations, you know, and went to all the youth groups. And do you guys have youth groups? And people still do that. You know, you sing weird songs, Father Abraham. I hope none of you know that. Do you? Okay. Yeah. Bless your hearts. And you know, we played weird games like Chubby Bunny. Do you guys, you got the, yes, how you kill off your youth group kids, you put how many marshmallows can you fit in your mouth, you know? Yeah, those are weird. There came a point where I began to just look around and people were only playing games with me. You know, no one was trusting me with the gospel of Jesus. And so I became very disenchanted with the church. But I was always still fascinated by Jesus and by the gospel. But like Gandhi, I just wondered if any of the Christians took him seriously. Because as I looked around, I saw a lot of folks that were believers, and I was one of them. You know, I went to a festival like this and came forward, you know, with the whole group, and we have altar calls, you know, and came and just snot flying everywhere, crying, hugging people, you know, I don't know you, but I love you, man. And it was, you know, it was nice. So I got born again, and then I went the next year and got born again, you know, and did that like six or eight times, and it was great every time. But there was a time where I said, I'm a believer. You know, I believe all the right stuff, that Jesus was the Son of God, rose from the dead, and all these things. But I have no idea what it means to be a follower of Jesus, you know? And as far as I could see, a lot of people were writing books about the gospel and talking about the gospel, but I was yet to see the gospel really tried out, you know? And I think if you ask most Christians, or most non-Christians for that matter, what do Christians believe? They can tell you what they believe. But if you say, how do Christians live? They just shrug their shoulders because we haven't shown people another way of life. And what I love about the early church is that it was a crazy way of life. You know, the scriptures call it the way. It was a way. And so in the same breath that they would denounce the empire and the materialism of their culture, they could say, and we've got the way. It's another way. We've got little cells all over the Roman Empire, and you're welcome here, but our values are upside down. The last are first, the first are last. The mighty come down from their thrones, and the poor are blessed, not the rich. So that's weird. You know, I think when I was raised, we have something that I call spiritual bulimia. That you are, I'm sure, aware of the eating disorder where a horrible eating disorder where folks gorge themselves and vomit back up, but never anything doesn't digest, you know? And I think we've got a spiritual form of that, at least in the States, where we've got an entire Christian industry that's suffocating us with stuff, you know? And you buy books, you do devotions, you listen to music, they even have these things called testaments. Do you have those? It's a mint, a candy that's Christian somehow, you know? And so you can eat your testaments and somehow you're so, it's weird. And so I'm sitting there gorging myself on the Christian industry and yet I'm starving to death for God. And I would read the scriptures and I would think, man, what a weird dude Jesus was, you know? Like some people, if they wanted to get out to their friends on the boat, if they left them, they might yell for them, you know, hey guys, you left me here, you know, or they might jump in the water, swim out to the boat. Jesus' friend's leaving. He wants to get out to the boat, so he just steps on the blessed water. That's weird, you know, like some people, if they wanted to heal someone, they might lay hands on them or gather around and pray. And Jesus wants to heal a blind guy, so he picks up some dirt off the ground, spits in it, and wipes it on the dude's eyes. That's nuts. That's crazy, you know? I mean, can you imagine the religious folks doing that? Rabbi, could you spit me up a holy glob, you know? No. Only Jesus was so crazy to suggest that if we want to be the greatest, we should become the very least. I'm not really sure where we get the idea that Christians are cool. I was raised trying to be cool, you know. I was in the in crowd doing all the right stuff. We have our big dance, you know, the prom in the States, and I was prom king. I know that's hard to imagine for some of you, but and so I was cool. And then I met Jesus, and it messed me up, you know. It ruined me, and I started seeing different values and seeing that I should hang out with people that I naturally wouldn't. And I think I'm still recovering from that. I went up to Philadelphia and I started studying the scriptures, just pouring into them. And I became less and less cool. You know, and I saw that it was the cool politicians and the cool religious leaders that executed our Jesus. And that you don't get killed for being cool. You know, you get crucified for messing up the social order, for hanging out with people that you shouldn't, for preaching values that were radically different from the status quo. And the scriptures say that we can be hot or cold, but if we're just cool, if we just fit into the pattern of the world, we'll be spit out of the mouth of God. And so I tried to cling to Jesus, and I thought I might meet Jesus and learn about Jesus in the halls of the university, but truly I encountered Jesus on the streets. I had a couple of friends that they used to go downtown about a half hour from our college, which was in the kind of rich suburbs. And they would go downtown and just hang out with homeless folks. And they invited me to go with them. We went down and they said, we'll introduce you to some of our friends. Now, first, I couldn't believe that there were folks on the street, much less that they were these guys' friends, you know. So we start going down and hanging out in the alleys and in the parks. And I met some of the most incredible people that I've ever met. I saw people share in ways that I in my wealthy upbringing, I never even imagined. One woman, we were sitting with her, and this meal truck came, and they were giving out meals, and she said, she fought her way to get a meal, you know? And we're like, man, are the meals that good, you know? Is the food that good? And she's like, oh, I don't know. I don't actually eat them, but there's a lady that sleeps in the alley right here, and she's old, and she can't get in to get a meal, so I fight through the line and get a meal so that I can give it to her. And I started to see what Mother Teresa meant when she said, in the poor we see Jesus in his most distressing disguises. I felt like I was going downtown to meet Jesus. And I felt like the scriptures were going from these empty words on paper into like a three-dimensional world that I was entering into. It was nuts. It was beautiful. And yet it became harder and harder for me to go back to my college dorm room, you know, and say I'm loving my neighbor as myself when they're sleeping in a cardboard box. So eventually one night my friend said to me, he said, hey, dress warm. We're going to sleep out. And I'm like, dude, don't tell my mom, you know. And we began sleeping out and hearing stories all night where we would just hang out with people, and we would crash in the parks with them or whatever. And as we were doing that, we began to find that a lot of our homeless friends in Philadelphia were being arrested for being homeless. It's something that swept across the United States, areas where folks there's anti-vagrant zones. There's laws like the sidewalk ordinance in Philadelphia where if you lie down on the sidewalk, you can be arrested. And Philadelphia started passing those laws. They put park hours up, and so you couldn't be in the park after hours. They put laws out where you can't sit or lie down on the sidewalk. They had one law in Philadelphia. We have a park. It's a famous skateboarding park where a lot of homeless people hung out. It's called Love Park. And to find irony, the city of Philadelphia made it illegal to distribute food in Love Park. I don't know if you find that odd, but here we are in Love Park in the city of brotherly love, and it's illegal to share food with your neighbor. So we started asking questions going, what does it mean to love our neighbor as ourself, you know? And I read this scripture, and I want to read it to you today. It's from the Gospel of Luke in chapter 14. I like this because it's how Jesus is telling us how to throw a party. Only he's talking to a lot of religious folks, so he doesn't call it a party, he calls it a banquet, you know. So, when you give a banquet, do not invite your friends. Now, this is a command of the Lord Jesus. When you give a party, don't invite your friends. You know, he says, don't invite your friends or your brothers or relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they might invite you back. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind, and you'll be blessed. I don't know about you, but I've never been to a party like that. You know, parties we went to, y'all hung out with your friends and folks that looked just like you. And as we saw our friends getting arrested, we said, let's just throw a party in Love Park. So we decided that we would gather as many of our homeless friends together and as many advocates and friends of theirs that we could. And we gathered in Love Park and we had a party. You know, we decided we wouldn't just start with the food, but we would celebrate the feast of the Eucharist and communion in Love Park. So we had some priests and pastors that came, and we were Catholic and Protestant all together, but we worshiped together in Love Park and had some drums and rocked out. And then we served communion, which isn't illegal because we said we were Catholic, you know, and it's not food at all, but actually the body and blood. So we serve communion there, and the police are all standing around, and they're like, I'm not locking them up. I'm not touching this, you know. And so we continued to worship. And after communion, we brought in pizza. And we continued the breaking of the bread, you know. And so we shared pizzas there. And there was a lot of television and media and everything. So the police surrounded the park, but they didn't arrest anyone. They just let us sleep there all night. And we continued on and off. We would come out. We would have feasts in Love Park, Love Feast, where we would gather and share pizzas and communion. And originally we had like 100 or 200 of us, and it was no problem because there were a lot of different people. We had even folks from city council that came out with us and everything. But then as it became more and more just homeless folks and friends together, and less media and less hoorah. One night when we were asleep, the police surrounded the park and they came in and they arrested everyone there. And I don't know, it was my first time going to jail. You know, I was barely awake and I'm just like, oh my gosh, what's happening? We get taken to jail, we go in, and there's like a bunch of us, a lot of them didn't even really anticipate getting arrested that were taken into jail. And we had a lot of lawyers that called us and they were like, we'll represent you, you know, and we said, in all respect, come to the courtroom and support us, but we don't want to be represented by a fancy lawyer because our homeless friends don't have that. We want you to be there with us, but we want to be represented by a homeless person who can speak for all of us. And so our buddy Fawn stood up and he was our lawyer. He's a homeless guy in Philadelphia. And we were in the courtroom and the district attorney, the prosecutor is there. I accidentally called her in court. I called her the persecutor. Prosecutor. So there we, I really did. And there we are, the prosecutor's there and she's wanting us to have, jail time. She wanted us to serve time. She wanted us to have thousands of dollars of fines. She wanted us to, have hours and hours of community service. Ooh, imagine that, you know. And so there we are in the court and Fawn stands up and he says, yes, Your Honor, we think that these laws are evil and wrong. And sat down. We're like, what he said. And I had a shirt on that said, Jesus was homeless. And the judge said, come here. Jesus was homeless. Huh. I didn't know that. And I said, shaking, Your Honor, in the scriptures, Jesus says that foxes have holes to go into and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. And then the judge said, you guys might stand a chance. And we did stand a chance. We went through the courts and we had so much support that came in and some of us continued sleeping out, so we were arrested over and over. And as we went through the courts, the judge finally said, he said, what's in question isn't whether or not these people broke the law. It's pretty clear that they broke the law. But what's in question is the constitutionality of the laws that we're passing. And the DA said back, well, the constitutionality of the law isn't before this court. And the judge said, oh yes, the constitutionality of the law is before every court in the country. And he said, if it weren't for people who broke the unjust laws, we wouldn't have the freedom that we have. That's what this country's built on, from the Boston Tea Party to the Civil Rights Movement. He said, we'd still have slavery. And then he said, these guys aren't criminals. They're freedom fighters. And I find them all not guilty on every charge. And drop the charges. So it was a beautiful victory, but a lot of those laws are still in place and we still struggle to figure out what it means to be a Christian. But I've come to know that Christianity is about troublemaking. It's about not being afraid of stepping into the world with a different set of values and knowing the promise of Jesus is that the world will hate us because we are not of the world any more than he was of the world, and we saw what they did to him. And so I remember one of those police officers when we were taken to jail. They actually took my Bible from me. And I'm like, there's no metal in there, you know? And they said, no, no, no. And he said, half joking with a smile, he said, this is a dangerous thing, so we won't have you reading it. And he smiled and laughed, but he still took it from me. And it made me think, you know, it is a dangerous book. This stinking book has got me in a lot of trouble, you know? And I think of our Jesus, and I think how dangerous this gospel is if we truly take it seriously, you know. That C.S. Lewis described Aslan, the lion, you know, and he said, he told the story of Lucy, and Lucy goes to meet the lion. And she says, oh, I didn't know Aslan was a lion. I shall be quite scared to meet a lion. And Mrs. Beaver says, oh yeah, no one meets Aslan without their knees knocking. Yeah, you should be scared. And she said, but I thought you said Aslan was safe. And Mrs. Beaver says back, no, no, no. No one said anything about safe. We said Aslan is good. Aslan is good, but not safe. And I think that's our Jesus, this Jesus that's not safe at all, but that's good and promises to be with us no matter where we go or where this gospel takes us. And so that's meant a lot going to Iraq, you know, and going to different places that my mother, bless her heart, God love my mother, huh? I'm her only kid, so she's trying to hold on for the ride with me. And when I told her that I was going to Iraq, she cried. But she also said, Shane, over the years I've come to see that we're not called to safety as Christians, but we're promised that when we go into danger, God will be with us. And there is no more safe place to be or more beautiful place to be than in the hand of God. And perhaps the most dangerous place for a Christian is in safety and in comfort. Preach it, Mom, right? And she said, go to Iraq and be with those families. And so I did. And I never felt the presence of God like I felt there. I mean, it was the middle of the bombing, so we had bombs falling everywhere. But I knew that I was in the place where God had me to be. And so I don't know what all your experiences are with that, but I know that it's a dangerous gospel. And when we hear about Jesus, we should shiver a little bit, you know, because in all of this, in our country, everybody's called a believer. You know, folks go, oh, are they a believer? You know, are they a believer? And I grew up thinking this is just about believing, you know. And then you see that the scriptures say we can believe, we can have faith to move mountains. But if we don't have love, it's nothing. It's an empty gong. And I think that we can, the book of James says that even the demons believe and they shudder. Some Christians don't even shudder. We just believe. You know, it's so empty that it's become so stale that we don't even shudder anymore. And I think when we hear Jesus, we've got to shudder a little bit. You know, have you seen The Lion King? Where they come up and they're like, Mufasa, ooh, you know, it's kind of like that. It's like, Jesus, oh my gosh, it's a dangerous, beautiful Jesus. This is our lover and our Savior. And it could get us in a lot of trouble. I'm going to tell you one last story because as all this went on, I sort of became a protester, you know? And so we would go out in the streets and protest all these laws. We would sleep out and get arrested. And then we saw that people were actually quite polarized by what we were doing, and it wasn't really making a whole lot of change. And I've come to see that just like believers, activists are a dime a dozen, you know, that'll go out and just protest in the streets, but sometimes that activism isn't rooted in love, and we can sell everything we have and give it to the poor, but if we don't have love, it's nothing. And so the deepest thing for us has become trying to be not just believers or activists, but lovers. And lovers are hard to come by these days. In fact, I was on the airplane, and we have to fill out this thing to get into the countries. And so I was filling it out, and it says occupation. I'm like, occupation? What's that? You know, I just wrote lover. I don't know, you know, right? And that we are created to be lovers. If we choose a career or a vocation or whatever, it's because it helps us to incarnate the love of God in this world. And so, more than just protesters, we've come to see that we're not just the appendages of a filthy, rotten system, but that we're declaring another alternative, another way of life that we can celebrate together. So there was a time where I was arrested in a sleep out in New York, where Mayor Giuliani was arresting a lot of the homeless folks in New York. They were arrested for sleeping and charged with disorderly conduct. I don't know how you all sleep, but you would be hard-pressed, even on my worst nights, to find me sleeping for disorderly conduct as I sleep. That's a loud snore, I think. But they were arrested over and over, and so I slept out in one of those areas, and I was arrested that night. I was sound asleep and woke up to police and cameras all around me and was pulled into an arrest arrested for sleeping and charged with disorderly conduct. And we had a very high-profile case, so one of the lawyers in New York actually stepped forward. And at this point, we said, we want you to help us because we want to set a legal precedent in New York. And so we went through the courts, and we won on every count. We won a wrongful arrest, wrongful prosecution, police misconduct. And not only did we set the legal precedent, but we won, like, $12,000. that's not small change around our way. So we started talking about, what do we do with all this money? I mean, it doesn't belong to us. It belongs to the homeless and to the poor that are living this struggle every day. So at the same time, we were doing a Bible study. We have a thing in Philadelphia called the Alternative Seminary. And I went to seminary for a while, and people talk about weird stuff in seminary. Bless your hearts, those of you that have persevered and made it through. I was at Princeton, and there was someone that came up to me and said, you know, we've been talking about a lot of things and like to hear what you think about it. And he said, we're wondering whether or not you think they had termites on the ark. Termites on the ark? I said, you know. He said, yeah, because if they didn't have termites on the ark, then how do we still have them? And if they did have termites in the ark, it was made of wood, then how did anyone survive? And I'm just like, you guys have far too much time. You know, what are you talking about? So we have a school in Philadelphia called the Alternative Seminary, where we bring those academics down to the streets of Philadelphia, and we do Bible study with folks in our neighborhood and homeless folks. So we get some scholars, but we get some people who have tremendous street wisdom. And everyone's valued as a teacher, and everyone's valued as a learner. In this study, we had some folks that had been on the streets, and we had a CEO in the class, and it was a class on biblical economics, and we used Chad Meyer's book. He's a friend of ours that's here teaching, and we used a little booklet that he had just to get us into the study of economics. We studied the Jubilee, which was to dismantle these systems of inequality, to set the slaves free, release the debt, and redistribute the property. And we started thinking about that, dreaming about that, and one person had $10,000 that had been invested in the stock exchange. And they said, this is not my money, but it needs to be returned. So now we had like $20,000, you know, that we're thinking about it together of what we should do. And we decided, let's have a jubilee. Let's celebrate an alternative economy. And where else to do it, you know, but Wall Street, right? We're just a few hours from Wall Street. So a bunch of us in Philadelphia began talking together, and we said, let's redistribute the money in the face of the global economy. Let's celebrate the way of life of the Scriptures. So we said, this is not just about a one-time celebration, but it's about the way. It's about a way of life that could lead us into a world that's more sustainable and more sane. And so we sent $100 bills out. Each one of them was written the word love. And they were sent to 100 communities around the country and around the world that are incarnating the alternative economy of God, that are trying to live the gospel with integrity. And we said we're celebrating a way of life that we're discovering together. And we said, we're going to have a little party on Wall Street if you want to come. So we gathered on Wall Street, and before that, we decided we'll get enough money that everybody can share in it. So we got $1,000 in quarters, $1,000 in nickels, and $1,000 in dimes. That's a lot of nickels. I don't know if you can imagine that, but it's a stack. You know, it looked like we were robbing the bank when we walk out of there. And so we had all this money, and we got a lot of paper money that we ordered, and we wrote love on every bill. And we had a group that the day that we gathered, about 50 or so of us went up to New York, and some of the folks that are here today were there with us, and we said, we're going to fill our bags full of money. So everybody take as much as you can carry. We had bikers that were going to ride through with bikes and dump their change. We had folks that were filling their backpacks full. Some folks were business people, so they had briefcases that they filled up full of the money. And that morning that we gathered on Wall Street, we went out. A group of people went ahead of us with $2 bills. And $2 bills are kind of weird in the States. You don't find them everywhere. And they started hiding them all over lower Manhattan and in phone booths and in parks and in places where homeless folks lived. And we went out and we gave out flyers that talked about the lawsuit that we had won. And each flyer had a dollar on it. And it invited folks to Wall Street to join the Jubilee. So word spread pretty fast, you know, and we gathered that morning just as the bell was about to open on Wall Street. We stood forward and we announced together. Some of us have worked on Wall Street. Some of us have slept on Wall Street. Some of us are addicted to money and some of us are addicted to drugs. But what we've come to see together is that we are a broken people in need of God, and that our world is broken by our own greed, and that we believe today another world is possible, another world is necessary, and another world is already here. And we call it the kingdom of God that is within us and among us, and we want to celebrate it this morning. We said our Israelite ancestors, they used to blow a shofar as they marked the celebration, and so we didn't know if we had one, but we had this like 70-year-old beautiful nun named Sister Margaret, and she's like, "Oh, I've got a shofar, you know, bring it." So she stood up, she's standing there with her huge ram's horn, you know, and we just as the bell was beginning to ring on Wall Street, she blew the shofar, and we started a celebration of the Jubilee on Wall Street. Folks started dancing and blowing bubbles. We decorated the whole place with sidewalk chalk. We dropped banners that said, "Stop terrorism, share." One of them said, Gandhi's quote, "There's enough for everyone's need, but there's not enough for everyone's greed." Another one of them we dropped just said, "Love." And so we started celebrating. And the most amazing thing is, as soon as the shofar hit, folks were on the balconies and they threw down the paper money and it just filled the sky. Folks started dumping their bags out and the streets turned silver. And people, it was contagious, you know? It was like folks came out of the stock exchange. One of them bought bagels and started giving them out. A guy was picked up some of the money and he said, "Now I can get my prescription of medicine filled. Thank you." Another guy came through sweeping the streets. He was one of the street cleaners. And he flashed his dustpan to us, which was filled with money. And he just winked and said, "Thank you." It was contagious. You know, we didn't have to lock down on the doors of the stock exchange and keep people out. We celebrated something so much more exciting that people came out. And I think that's what we need so much in our world today, is we need people who will become this sort of wild extremist for love, that the world can see another way of life, that we would make revolution irresistible, that we would woo people into a movement, this Jesus movement that's so beautifully ancient and so amazing that it can gather a zealot revolutionary at the same table with a tax collector and imagine together how we fit into another vision of this world. So it's a beautiful thing that we came back to Philadelphia and we were giving out our lunches where we feed about 40 folks a day, and at this time we were anyway, and we had our lunches that we were giving out, and folks were waiting in line, and I have no idea how this happened. Some person that I had never seen before in my life stepped out of a car. He came up and he said, a tall African-American guy came up and I've never seen him in our neighborhood, and he came up and he said, "Are you guys the folks that help organize this? The meal here?" And I said, "Yeah, we are." And he said, "Well, don't mind me." And he just started walking down our line, giving out $5 bills to every person that was in line. I'm just like, that's crazy. I love it. You know, it's how contagious giving is and how contagious this alternative vision is. So I think, you know, in this world, people have seen Christian extremists. You know, in our country, folks call the Christian extremists people who will blow up the abortion clinics in the name of God. People who will march in the streets and hold signs that say, "God hates fags." And so we've seen Christian extremists. When I went to Iraq, I was amazed to see, you know, the government in the U.S. calls the leaders in Iraq Muslim extremists. Well, when I got to Iraq, they called our leaders Christian extremists. And they said, because, and one of them, she was a Muslim, she had been to the States, and she said, "When I was in the United States, I fell in love with a lot of things." She said, "I fell in love with your fast food and with your shops and things." She said, "But I also fell in love with your Christianity." And I sat for a moment, because I hadn't always been in love with our Christianity, and I didn't know what that meant. And she said, "But now, there were so many beautiful Christians I met. But now, when I see your government declare war in the name of God and ask God's blessing on your military, I can't help but say, what has happened to your Christianity? What's happened to your God of love, to your Prince of Peace? And I've come back haunted with that question. So Dr. King said, these are extreme times in which we live. The question isn't whether or not we will be extremists. The question is, what kind of extremists will we be? Will we be extremists for hatred? Or will we be extremists for love? And our Jesus was an extremist for love and for grace. And I hope that we're rising up a people who are filled, a church that's filled with extremists for love and for grace, that will have, I'm just a goofball and a ragamuffin that's holding on to this Jesus. But when I went to Iraq, I saw so many people of faith that were there, Christians that were there to be the face of Christianity, another face of Christianity, other than what the Iraqis saw in the news. And it had so much integrity to be there, because it was very, very, very confusing to them what Christians believed in and what Christians stood for. So I hope together, you know, Dan Berrigan, he said, until Christian peacemakers, until their courage surpasses the courage that we have for war, war will continue to triumph. And until the courage and ingenuity that we have to share surpasses the devices that we make to hoard our wealth, greed will continue to triumph. Together, let us imagine that there's another way of life that we can celebrate, a jubilee, a peacemaking community of the church, that we could walk through the world and the world that we are, that they would know that we are Christians by our love, by our love. Amen.